For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another week's helping of the weird and the wonderful in the world of Non-League, which is perhaps the best introduction I could ever give the man alongside me. Certainly wonderful. The man other managers used to fear until Dean Brennan decided to try and turn the tables and ask you a question during the gaffer tapes this week. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Dave Anderson.
Welcome. Delighted to be here, obviously.
Yeah, I mentioned Dean Brennan, manager at Wealdstone, top of the National South, but of course, prior to that job, was the roving reporter for this show during the playoffs last season.
He was,
And this week, it became the latest interviewee to feature on the gaffer tapes. And at one point, he did try and sort of swing a question back your way.
Well, what happens? And first of all, I need to thank him because he did it at late notice. We were trying to get another, Harrogate manager, wasn't it, Simon? But their game was cancelled, so we needed to get one in the can, as you call it in showbiz. See, I know all the jargon. So I phoned Dean on Saturday and I said, look, can we do it to get it? Because he was on the list to do, obviously. And he said, yeah, come in. So I wanted to do it around about 11:30. Dean's gone, don't worry, come in at 1:00. And we literally finished it at 2:45. And you can hear that on the interview, the guy coming into the team sheets. The chairman, physios, you know, and he was more relaxed than I was, but as far as him asking me questions, what tends to happen because we're friends, and I've been there quite a lot this year because it's on my doorstep, is you forget your recording. So he thought he was having a beer. We weren't having a beer. It was before the game, but he forgot. So he starts talking to me, and I'm going, this is about you for a change. You know, it's usually all about me, as you know, but. Very good, and again, very honest. And what I found a million things with the way Dean does stuff before games is totally different to how I've done it. And I've seen it in operation in the top of the league, and it works. And very relaxed, much more relaxed and positive than I ever was before a game. But I also have seen managers when you get them in the right mood in the right place. I've seen his mood change. You see his mood change from happy to sad to angry to, you know, depending on what subject you're covering. And I always find with managers, when we're interviewed by journalists, we pull the shutters down and we play like a card, you know, keep our cards close to our chest. And I feel I've been fortunate enough that they haven't done that with me. They've put their cards on the table, and that makes it much more interesting. And you can nearly, if you listen to the interview, you can hear the tone. I think they actually bring it up in the interview that his whole body language has changed. But I thought it was another good one, and I think we're lucky that guys are being as honest and open and enjoying it, which is nice.
Yeah, and it's been well received as well. And the whole idea behind it was to show the human side, to show that, you know, you are human after all. But And, you know, the grief you get from players, from fans, from authorities, it can wear you down.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are guys, you know, they're still trying to say the right things at the right time because that's what becomes like a habit, you know. But when I've managed to get a bit out of them. But I thought Dean's was really interesting because obviously I had to leave home, and we talked a little bit about that. And obviously our own stupid humour about him being from the Republic of Ireland and me being from Northern Ireland comes in a couple of times, but it's just me and him being stupid. But I think it's, if you listen to them all, you start to come up with different ideas, you know. Each manager has chucked something at me. I thought, well, I didn't think about that, you know. So it's just been really enjoyable.
Yeah, well, more to come on the non-league gaffer tape as well.
And more to come from up north. We listen, you know, it's like London. There was four flakes of snow this morning, so we'll be snowed in for a fortnight. But we are trying to get the lads when they come down south from up north so we can get them.
And, of course, this weekend, FA Trophy, FA Vales quarterfinals this weekend. Massive games for the clubs involved, and we'll get to them later in the show. But I wanted to pick up on a question posed by one of our listeners via social media about one of those taking part this weekend. Current trophy holders, AFC Fylde, at home to Harrogate Town this weekend. You mentioned Simon Weaver there, but in the competition. But Patrick Devitt has asked his filed struggle this season after losing in the playoffs last season. One of the biggest, if not one of the biggest surprises in non-league this year. I mean, obviously they changed the manager in October, which was Dave Challoner. I think that was a game that was called off. For the weather, and Dave was preparing.
We spoke to him a couple of weeks.
He's now obviously up at Hartlepool United, but that was he was preparing his team to play a game. The game gets called off, and then before the end of what would have been the game, he'd lost his job there. But they recruited quickly. Mm. Jim Bentley left Morecambe, come out of the Football League, comes into them. So you think that they've appointed well as a manager, but they're still second from bottom in the National League. They've got, I think, 9 points away from safety. They've got games in hand to make that up, but they're in the quarterfinals of the trophy. It's the trophy they won last year, so they want to retain that. They want to keep going with that. But
I'd say they want to retain their status in the
National League. The National League's got to be very important, because these games are going to be piling up. Now, it's all well and good having three or four games in hand over those above you.
Bottom or top. I think if you're in the middle, you don't care because you're sort of playing it out. But I read the tweet and I answered him as well. Yes, it is. It is a big shock. No one could see it coming. But someone made another point. Is it just they are what they are? They've got they ain't got unlimited resources. And sometimes you stretch the piece of elastic as far as it can be stretched, and the next thing it does is it breaks. So I have to be totally honest here. I don't have enough insight to the inside. So I'm just waffling around it, and if I was listening to me talking, I'd be going, stop waffling and say something. The honest truth is I can't say anything because I don't know the story that well.
Yeah, I think it also shows how competitive that division is this year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they won the trophy last year. They were up there, within kicking distance of getting promotion. And then this season, they're down the bottom. And not a lot of change. All right, there's a change of manager, but certainly resource-wise, I don't think anything's changed there. But it just shows, when we spoke to Jamie Vermiglio at Chorley, who were one spot below them, he was the one that was telling us, look, we've been in almost every game. Yeah. It's just so tight. And if luck's not with you.
No, and to be fair, I speak to Mark Gray quite a lot, and people of the show would know that. And they had a similar experience early on at Sutton, but they've managed to pick their form up, and games that they were in, they've got something out of. My problem is when I look at the league table now for Fyde is that Christmas is way behind us, and all of a sudden you have a couple of games in hand, but not heaps. And I think if I'm being honest, I don't know the situation, but I'm saying it's a difficult task for them now, because just by looking at the table and the run that they're in and the division that they're in, which is just clinical, it's our top division,
And they're playing in the trophy this weekend, so as a manager, it's the first thing you turn your phone on, you then look at the other the results in your division. Well, if you've won or lost in the trophy, you've got to be thinking about, well, are we further adrift or
you're caught but between a million outcomes, because you want to stay in the trophy because your season's alive. You're wondering, is that a fact in the league? Why can't we play in the league like we play in the trophy? If we lose in the trophy Saturday, does that mean everything's going to fall in around us? If we lose in the trophy, does that mean we'll now focus on the league and get going a run? And it's funny, everybody's got the answers afterwards. Nobody has the answers now. Give me the answers now and I'll make you a manager. And so I feel for him. But looking at just with our experience or my experience in management, I look at it and I think that's a tough ask. It's not an impossible ask. But something needs to happen, and he'll desperately want to stay in the trophy because, you have a chance of winning one of the major trophies, in our football and playing it at Wembley. So it's I think I'd like to know more of the inside of it, to give an honest answer. But I suppose that the thing we can take out of it is nothing's, you're guaranteed nothing in football.
So just 8 teams left in the FA Trophy as quarterfinals hit this weekend, and only half of those are from the National League. If form and league position played a role in the FA Trophy, our next guest would probably be stress-free. A National League manager drawn at home against a Step 4 side, but this is the Cup, this is football, and this is a young manager with plenty of experience to know that life's not that easy. So let's speak to the Barnet manager, and welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Darren Curry.
How you doing?
I'm good now. What about you? I know you won't be taking this game lightly, but you've got to be at least pleased with home advantage against Halso in town this weekend.
Yeah, it was one thing that was put to me before the draw was made, and all I was hoping for was the home tie. Our home form's been pretty good for the season, really, but certainly in recent months, we were just looking ultimately for that home advantage.
Yeah, and you say that home advantage. It's been good to you in the previous rounds. The first round of the trophy, a 2-1 win against Weymouth, then an away draw at Farsley Celtic, but you won 2-0 in the replay at home. And then last round, I think that probably the result of the round, the 3-0 home win against Barrow. Is that the sort of result that sort of makes you think, actually, we could go all the way here?
It certainly gives you confidence because, obviously, Barrow are a good side and they're proving their worth in the league this season. So we knew it was going to be a difficult game. But they've all been difficult. I thought Weymouth was a really tough fixture to come through. I thought they were good on the day, but we found a way of winning. And then Farsley going up to their place and then obviously earning the right to bring them back to ours. It was a difficult tie-up at their place because the pitch wasn't great and the conditions on the day were quite poor. But certainly the Barrow fixture is where we, as a group of players, not so much myself, but as players, they've probably taken a lot of confidence from winning that game because Barrow are obviously going well this year.
Yeah. Now you mentioned the Hive being a fortress. So just looking at the league stats here, is it just 3 league defeats in 15 there this season? I think it's only Notts County with a better record in the division. Is that a psychological or physical factor that gives that added extra for the home games?
I don't know. I mean, you try. Most teams will tell you they try and make their own stadium a fortress, and you know we get the crowd behind us there, and it's apart from recently where our pitch has suffered with the weather, our pitch is normally in very, very good condition, so it allows us to play the type of football that we're capable of playing. So you know whether it's psychological or physical, you know. We've managed to make it a bit of a fortress this year, and we're going to need to continue that form if we're going to be successful in the trophy and obviously finish the season strong in the league.
Yeah, you mentioned the pitch recently. 2 weather hit games, an abandonment against Harrogate Town, and then a late postponement midweek against Dagenham and Redbridge. I know the club have put out a statement, the high water table and the local flood alleviation measures and that. Yours is a new ground. It's just one of those things, isn't it, that affects everybody at football, but particularly non-league?
Yeah, and I think it is frustrating in particular for us because we have a new stadium, a fairly new stadium, and it's state-of-the-art, and we have got wonderful facilities there. And the pitch, like I say, in recent years has been immaculate. And unfortunately, just the volume of rain we've had of late, it's just failing to drain anywhere. And even when it does drain ever so slightly and you can't see the surface water, you get the odd downpour that we've been having lately, and it just sits on the surface. And I respect the fact that opponents have been frustrated, but trust me, we're equally as frustrated. My own team are frustrated. They want to play football.
Yeah, and how, as a manager, because obviously you're as frustrated as everybody else, but you almost need to hide that frustration and try and lift the players and get them focused on, well, keeping themselves fit, I guess, more than anything, because they can't play some game-time football.
Yeah, and that's obviously myself and my assistant, Junior Lewis. That's our job. If I was to rant and rave and show disappointment and frustration, then I believe it would filter into my changing room. So I just try to keep a sort of calm, level head about it. There's a lot of things we can affect, but the weather we can't. We all know that. So I don't get too stressed about it because I can't control the weather. So I hope that the way I've sort of behaved myself during this frustrating period has filtered into the change room. But the mood's been good, and a lot of how you can judge judge your team is how they train and how their attitude and atmosphere is around the training ground. And I've got to be honest, although they're frustrated, the atmosphere has been first class.
I think that's obviously going to be important going into this game. We spoke with the Halesowen Town manager last week, and he's certainly taken it very seriously. And the gap in the pyramid certainly didn't seem to concern him. And I guess they've already seen off Maidenhead and FC Halifax already anyway. What about from your guys' point of view? How do you ensure that they stay focused on the game and not the opposition?
Well, I think for us, we can take a lot of encouragement from being the underdog in recent times. I mean, obviously, I've only been the manager for 14, 15 months now, and within the first week of me getting the job, we obviously went up to Sheffield United in the FA Cup, and we beat them at Bramall Lane. So I've got 95% of that squad still around me. So they are very aware of whether you're favourite or underdog. When you're in cup football, everyone raises their game when they're the underdog, and you know when you're the favourite, you're there to be shot down. They're quite level-headed, and they've got that to lean on in recent times. So there's absolutely no way that we approach this game any different to how we would approach, for example, Harrow in the last round. Mm.
And obviously the trophy's the big focus this weekend, but the league's all important too. And you're very much in the hunt there. I think just 2 points outside the playoff, games in hand over those above you. That's probably the beauty of the extended playoff system. Are you worried about the fixture backlog, though?
I mean, look, it could become a concern, because if the weather continues and we're running out of Tuesdays left in the season, so we might find ourselves in a situation where we play a Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, which will be testing, don't get me wrong, very testing. But the boys at this stage of the season, they're fit. Training a lot of the time at this stage of the season is tactical and more about just keep ticking the boys over. They've got their fitness levels. They have an understanding of how we're trying to play. So if it gets to a point where we need to play a large amount of games in a short space of time, then it'll just be my job to make sure that we modify training so that we're 100% going into the game.
Yeah, and talking of your job, you mentioned you've been in the job, 14, 15 months, and you seem to have settled in very quickly. You said about that big FA Cup game, it sort of forced you into it, I guess. But are you enjoying the challenge of management now?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's the next best thing, don't get me wrong. I miss playing every day. I speak to friends and ex-players that I've played with, and it's very mixed. You get some people that miss playing and some people that ain't that fast, but I'm one of them that I miss playing. I love playing football, and this is definitely the next best thing. And I've got a group of players that I really enjoy working with. I've got some real talented boys, some young boys that have got big futures in the game, and I'm proud enough to be their manager and hopefully help them have an opportunity to go on to higher levels in their career. But to be honest, when I played, I was always one of them ones that wanted to help people around me anyway. So turning into a manager, I've found challenging. Don't get me wrong, it is a challenge, but a lot of it is just about helping people become better. I mean, there's loads of little branches to it, your tactical stuff, I get all that. But a lot of the time it's just helping people ultimately enjoy playing football and finding ways to help them improve. So that side of it, I love doing.
And that's, again, we always talk about the value of your assistant manager. That's where someone like Junior Lewis comes in very handy as well, to be able to, I guess, bounce ideas off as well.
Junior's been brilliant. He's obviously had a very successful playing career. He's been very successful as a coach and an assistant as well. And I've known Junior. We went to school together, so we've grown up together. Junior is a very good friend outside of football as well as a work colleague. But he's very knowledgeable. And I've got, if I had to name sort of four or five people in my life that love football as much as I do, you would definitely be one of them.
It sounds like a loving. Well, it's certainly great to know that you're both still enjoying football and you're both doing so well as well. We wish you well in getting the game on Saturday, and wish you well in the tie as well, and hopefully speak to you before the end of the season in regards to the league as well. Darren Curry, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Now, as well as the quarterfinals of the FA Trophy this weekend, we've got the FA Vars, and the man alongside me, well, he knows how exciting this can be. Yeah, just 8 sides left, and to get to this stage, you already need to have been pulling up a few trees, and our next side has certainly been doing that. They've beaten Romsey Town, Brockenhurst, Hanworthy United, and then at home in the last round, they beat West Auckland Town, who I know we spoke about being one of
the
favourites.
We beat them in the quarterfinals last year, yeah. Albeit away, Carl.
This time, they're back on the road again, and they've got a long journey because they've got a very long trip to Hebburn Town on Saturday. And to tell us more, it's a welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Assistant manager at Plymouth Parkway, Carl Curtis.
Yeah, so we travel tomorrow. So we're actually leaving tomorrow at 10 a.m. from Plymouth. So we'll get up there roughly. We leave around between six and seven on the Friday evening, and then we'll actually be staying again on a Saturday night, and we're coming home on a Sunday. So pretty similar to we did it a couple of rounds ago. We had to go to Ipswich, and we did that. We left on the Friday, a long journey, all day on the Friday. But we believe the preparation's key, really. So it helps the players. It's not a rush on the Saturday leaving. Really early Saturday hours in the early hours of Saturday morning, so we prefer to do it this way. So I think by doing that, it gives ourselves every chance to put on a performance and hopefully get the result we need on Saturday.
Yeah, Carlos, Steve, you're absolutely right. I mean, we did the same thing. We went up north 3 times. We went by train. We're fortunate. London, you know, straight up north, it took like 2.5 hours, but there were great trips. But for you, like Plymouth to Hebburn is. What sort of hours are we talking about? Are you going by coach, obviously, yeah?
Yeah, so we'll be leaving 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're going up by coach. And again, obviously, Friday traffic, when you head up past Birmingham area, it could be anywhere between 8 to 10 hours. It just depends on the volume of traffic. Ipswich, for example, when we went to Ipswich in a couple of rounds ago, we left similar time on the Friday morning. We actually had a restaurant booked for our meal with the players. We actually had to cancel it at 7 o'clock because we didn't get there till roughly about 6:30, 7 o'clock. So we had to actually find another restaurant to have a meal at 8:30. So it took all day, all afternoon to actually get to Ipswich, and obviously Newcastle was a little bit further on.
Yeah, it's a massive game though, isn't it? I think probably the biggest game in both your club's history and Hebburn's club's history. How many fans, you know, are making the trip up there?
Yeah, we believe we've got about between 80 to 100. We've got a mixture of people who are coming on, the coaches, and then we've got a mixture of people obviously going, flying up. So they'll fly from Exeter, and then they'll fly up on the Friday evening, and then their flight comes back on the Sunday, we believe. So we have got a mixture of supporters on the coach and flying.
That was the, you should have got into the chairman about it. That was the one, Carl. You should have been flying up there Friday.
Yeah, you can imagine. He pushed that. But obviously, we've got to be sensible with it. It is a long journey, but it's also a good time for the lads to get together sometimes, the camaraderie, just getting together in a relaxing environment and pressure's off day before. And I think in terms of building team spirit, and it can go a long way.
Oh, you're spot on.
Yeah, I mean, it is hassle in terms of taking time off work and that, and we've been lucky with our players' employers and stuff. They've allowed them to do that, and the players have been great with that, getting time off work. But I think we've got to utilise this time we've got together, and not you see it as dead time. We've got to try to make use of it as much as we can. So I think we'll do that. We did that on the way up to Ipswich, and we'll do that on the way up to Newcastle, and hopefully if we get results, Sunday's trip back on the coach will be... very enjoyable.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's no way you can travel. You've got to get up, get a good night's rest, and sort of put the big game forward. The other side of the coin is because of the distance, Carl, is, you know, we're always looking for information on the opposition. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, like everyone in the FA Vars, that's what, from a management and a coaching perspective, makes the Vars so exciting, is because obviously you're going into the unknown, you're playing opponents you don't really know, and then we have to do our homework in terms of preparation, what the opposition looks like and what their individual strengths and weaknesses are, etc. In terms of the players, all they have to really worry about is the 90 minutes. But so we've been doing a lot of work on that, not just for this game, but previous rounds, like all VARs managers and coaches have been doing, I'm sure. So even in the first round of the FA VARs, we've done a lot of work on our opponents then. So we went into real detail in the last round, mine, for West Auckland, because, again, they were a team from Newcastle area, and we had a lot of information and material on them. So we did a... I've done a video analysis session with the boys on the Wednesday for 45 minutes, which I believe led us in really good stead heading into the game on the Saturday. So we didn't go into it blind. So all our players and one-on-one duels knew exactly who, what type of opponent they were coming up against. And I think that helped us to a certain degree on that Saturday to get the result. However, this Saturday, we haven't unfortunately got as much material as we had on West Auckland, but we believe we've got enough. We've got some contacts up that way. I've got a good friend of mine that lives up in Sunderland. He's been fantastic getting some information for me. And I believe No Doubt Heaven as well has done the same. We've got enough material on each other to have a game plan and get the result that each team craves for.
And obviously, the other sort of point that you won't come across a lot is we found it in the later stages. All of a sudden, you're playing in front of full houses virtually. How do you think your guys will deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of big games down as well. So, you know, in the last round, the West Auckland down in Plymouth, I think our gate was 750, something around that region. So we have a lot of big games ourselves down here. I mean, in pre-season, we played the local professional side from Plymouth Argyle, and we had nearly 2,000 fans at our home ground for that one.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it's a bit different going away from home in an environment that you're not used to. It's going to be intimidating. But we do have players that have played a higher level. They played it in front of big crowds before, and I believe we'll thrive on that. I think it'll work in our favour. I really do. I think we'll be intimidated. I think we just got to weather the, you know, see through the first 20 minutes, like all big games, the first 20 minutes are vital. See yourself in through the first 20 minutes, and then we'll settle down and we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's the last one for me, Tim. I absolutely agree. I think when you get to this stage, every team that's left in this competition now understands that their players can handle big games. You know, and I used to say to my guys, look, big players produce big moments in big games, and that's why the eight sides are left that are in there. So they can handle it, you know. But I wish you well, Carl, and it's a fantastic experience. It's a great journey. You know, fortunately didn't lose in it, but from here on in, it's a proper, I sort of look upon myself as reasonably experienced as a football manager, but it's a whole new level. It's great fun.
Yeah. Obviously, you guys winning it last year, especially in the manner you did as well. Was it in extra time, I believe?
It was, yeah.
I'm
only 35. You wouldn't. Age's about 28 years during it. No, but it's just in the call. The whole camaraderie, the whole togetherness, the travelling together, the being together. I actually found that when I looked back on it, actually playing an away game, if you win it, actually helps the whole situation because you bond a bit more, and obviously you've been to Ipswich, and you would understand that, Clark. So I think that can be of benefit to you. What I would say is Hibbern are, you know, a good side, and it's a difficult tie, but if you're going to win it, you got to beat them all anyway.
That's it, exactly. I mean, like you say, you go back to when you mentioned about individuals, you know, you want your big players to stand up in these games, and we've had that in the last few rounds. I mean, we had a game in the VARs where Jordan Kopp, he ends up scoring a hat-trick for us. He's a big player for us. He scores a hat-trick on the day and he gets us through, more or less. You know, the team performed well. Well, did okay, but Jordan Kopp was the difference on the day. And I think the players will be the first to admit, in the last few rounds, in terms of our overall performance as a team, we played a lot better in league games. So we've done enough to win against West Auckland. We've done enough to win up in Ipswich. But overall, when I reflect on the 90 minutes, it wasn't our best performances by a long shot. However, we did enough, and we were streetwise. We knew how to get through the 90 minutes. We knew how to get the result. I'm just hoping that going up to Hibbern, that yes, they're a good side, but if we can perform how we know we can, now we have performed, and especially in our league campaign this year, I genuinely believe we've generally got a chance.
Yeah, you know, you go, but you've got to ask him about the league because
one question I was going to ask is a question you normally ask is about the value of a great assistant manager. Obviously, I let people into a little secret that Carl, as every assistant manager, every great assistant manager does, has stepped in at the breach at the last minute because Lee Hobbs, the manager, has had to go and deal with his real job. This is non-league, after all. Yeah. But I was going to ask Carl, we've had this debate in recent weeks about the relationship between assistant manager and manager. Carl, did you and Lee know each other before you became this managerial outfit?
We knew of each other, but we never really came across each other, like in a working environment or socially or anything. So, no, the answer to your question is really no, not really. But as soon as Lee got the job, he spoke to me before he actually got the job and said, "Look, I'm applying for the job. If I'm successful, would you be interested?" And I was interested. And I was also like excited to work with Lee because Lee had a good reputation in terms of managing. He came from an assistant manager's background himself, and then he just felt it was his time now to be a number one, which obviously turns out to be a great decision now looking back over the last 2.5 years what he's done as a number one. So it was exciting for me to go and be a number two under Lee and learn from him in terms of management, man management. And I'm sure Lee would say, like, Lee's learned a lot from me, maybe on the tactical side of things and the coaching side of things. And I've learned a lot from Lee in terms of managing players. It's really important, especially at non-league level. And he's one of the best at that, especially from down this way.
And you mentioned, you know, it's a good time to be bonding on the coach and things like that. But this is, whatever the result on Saturday, it's a massive week for the club, isn't it? Because you're top of the Western League on goal difference. The FA Vars on Saturday. Then on Tuesday, I think you're away in the league to second place Bradford Town, you know, weather permitting.
Yeah.
Then the next Saturday, you're at third place at Hallen. I mean, you're probably looking forward to the coach journey to get some sleep to charge your batteries up, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we were due to play Bradford this week. On Wednesday night, just gone, but it got postponed with waterlogged pitch. So we were a little bit concerned with the 7 days, not only physically, but psychologically as well. So, you know, having Bradford at home and then going up to Newcastle two days later and then playing, coming back on the Sunday and then having to go back on the road to Bradford again on the Wednesday, which are two huge league games, it did concern us a little bit, but again, like I say, the game's gone off at home, so we've been able to concentrate this week. We trained last night, concentrate this week fully on the Vars. We'll go up there, do what we've got to do in the Vars, win, draw, lose. Hopefully we'll perform. We'll come back in good spirits, and we'll look forward to the trip on Wednesday to Bradford.
And what about the weather? Looking at the weather, we're sat over in West London. We just had a snow flurry. The pitch out here is not looking... In best shape, but because of the water, is there a plan? You're leaving early on Friday morning. What's the plans for a pitch inspection up for the Vars game?
Well, we've not heard anything. So, I mean, they've been selling tickets. Apparently, they've sold up to 1,200 tickets. They've said there's no planned inspection. We know that they had a game at home last after they were due to play and it got postponed. Now, whether they've done that for a tactical reason to ensure it gave this week's fixture every chance, so that's what they've probably gone and done. But we believe we've had no concerns. We believe we've had pictures. Our chairman's actually been up there since yesterday, and he sent us some photos of the ground and the pitch, and it looked immaculate, to be fair.
Good. Well, that's good. That happened to us. We had one of our games cancelled, actually, at Earlham. We had to then reschedule, because I remember, because I was due to go home and watch Northern Ireland, and I had to blow it out. That's disgusted, you know, but yeah, things like that is always good for the players. So, you know, let the players know there is no problem with this. The pitch is fine. We've seen photos. All that reinforces that it's going to happen, you know.
Yeah. So, that's why our chairman's gone up yesterday, travelled all that way, spending a few days up there, and he's just getting used to the surroundings and just sending us photos back, and it looked a really good, well-run football club. So we're quite excited to get up there now, getting around that environment and prepare ourselves mentally and go and get the job done. Because we generally believe that we can do it.
Well, Carl, we wish you well with that. We should wish you well on the journey as well, and for the rest of the season in the Western League. And we'll be following your progress. Best of luck at the weekend, and thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Brilliant. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah,
thanks,
good Tim. Luck, Carl. Good luck to you, mate.
And so it's one of those heartwarming tales we love to cover on the Non-League Football Show. Dave, how often have we said a side needs an old head to make a difference?
yeah, quite a lot. But I'm all over. This is a great story, by the way.
How old do you want to go? Our next guest will tell us age is no barrier as they look to re-sign this weekend a man who made his debut for them as a teenager over 8 decades ago. To tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, CEO at Cray Wanderers, Sam Wright.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. And now, tell us some more. This is the tale of George Taylor.
Right, yeah. So it's certainly a quirky one. We were contacted by a local church down in Footscray, in the kind of heartlands of the Cray area. And they just said that they've got one of their parishioners. He mentioned that he's turning 100, and they asked him a few things he'd still like to do. And he said he would desperately love to kick a football once again. And they said, oh, did you play football? He said, yeah, I used to play the Cray Wanderers. I was a goalie, really going well, you know, made my debut with the club. He's going to be signed by a bigger club. And then I broke my leg, unfortunately, and war broke out. That's how long ago this guy. So he made his debut in 1938.
Unbelievable.
So he made his debut in 1938, which we've got two great historians, or a few lads that do the history of the club with us being so old. And it's quite poignant, I suppose, that it's their 160th anniversary this year as a football club. So they straight away had a look at it, and they come back and said, yeah, George Taylor, you know, definitely made his debut in the back end of the 37-38 season. It was against Northfleet, who were quite a big club at the time, and from looking into them, they did a lot of feeding. They fed players through to Tottenham back in the day. And then, you know, his debut was against Northfleet, and ironically, we lost 10-0, which is a bit of a blow for a young 18-year-old goalkeeper. But he does apparently say in the reports it could easily have been 20-0 and that George Taylor had an outstanding game. So, yeah, that's the kind of background behind him.
And it's like an ITV documentary, isn't it? You know, we've done all the research. There's a great history there. You know, you mentioned it's the 160th year of the club as well. So it's a big year for the club as well. But you're going to pull it all together, and there's going to be a you know, this Sunday becomes the denouement of the story. And George is, well, he's going to become a Cray Wanderers player again.
He certainly is. So, yeah, we thought we'd maximise the opportunity. He's really excited to come over. And I haven't met the guy yet, but he sounds so sprightly on the phone. So I rang his son, Clive, who's bringing him over, who's, I think, just about to turn 80. And he said, like, you know, because he wants to kick a ball. He genuinely wants to kick a ball. So we're going to get him on the pitch, and we thought we'd make the most of it. We're going to present him with a nice shirt, Taylor 100. And we're going to get him to kick that football, but we're also going to sign him as a player. So, you know, we made contact with the league and just said, look, I don't know if there's an age cap, but we're going to be signing quite an old player. Yeah. I think Kelly might have been a bit surprised. She probably thought I was trying to re-sign myself, so I'm desperate to play football still, 50. But my days are long gone. But George, I think, you know, he's going to love the fact that we're going to sit him on the pitch, make a formal announcement that we're signing a new player. And yeah, I think it definitely will be a historic moment signing someone who's 100 years old.
I think. Did you say he was a goalkeeper?
Yeah, he was a keeper. Apparently, he was really doing well, and Northfleet were on the verge of taking him, and he broke his leg playing. And as I said, by the time he recovered from the broken leg, war had broken out. Second World War had started, and he never actually played again.
Yeah, well, I think of the 100 as a goalkeeper, he's just reaching his prime, isn't he? I was saying to Tim when we read the story before we did the recording, I'd love him to play. I always want to take it further. I think you should say to them, let's start him. I didn't realise he was a goalkeeper. Let's start him. Let's kick off. Let's roll the ball back. Let him kick it. We'll put it out for a throw-in, and we'll go from there. Sub him and I think you should try and make him play, even if you start the game and whoever kicks off puts it into touch and he then goes off the pitch. What you're doing is sacrificing one of your subs, but Does a goalkeeper count?
It needs to be. Yeah, he does.
I would do it anyway, Sam. I think it's an unbelievable story, and I'm sure you'll have more people interested in it than us. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a big day, Sunday. We've got our sponsors' days, and we've got a lot of our main sponsors are over there on Sunday as well. And obviously, we're on a bit of a roll. We're on unbeaten in 2020. Toby's got the boys absolutely flying. So, yeah, no, we're really looking forward to today. But Jules Taylor is like the icing on the cake, really, for this weekend.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. Well, I hope somebody beats you, because you beat me when I had my record. Bromley broke my record at Wimbledon, you know that? I've never forgiven you.
My best pal is Jenko. He loves that. He still loves that moment.
Do you know, come to another Dave Anderson story.
Listen, I've got to tell you this, and I've wrote it. I'd just been getting over it about 20 years after the event, and I asked Jenko this, Sam. This is a true story. I turned up. Yeah. Me and the family booked a villa in where was it? Rhodes or somewhere, like it might have been Rhodes, and we were on the morning flight, and we turned up, and the family hadn't. They're waiting on their taxi to go to the airport. We were a little bit early, and the woman's come out and apologised. And I said, "Don't worry, sit down. You know, there's no big hurry. We've just arrived." And Janko came out. It was Janko's family. What's the chance?
They're holding you up.
Oh, what's the chances of that? I went, I'm just getting over you beating me, and you turn up and so ask him about it. Absolutely true. So, and
he's told me. I know the story. Yeah. He actually told me. Yeah, he said it was an unbelievable moment. Yeah.
Because we're standing at the gate, and the two waves, as sort of like my wife said after the went, oh, I was talking to Ian's wife, and she says, I think they might know each other. The next minute, the two of us are roaring with laughter, and the language went blue, and it was just one of them unbelievable moments, you know. So if you see him, tell him I said hello.
I will do.
Another great story that you only get in non-league. You don't get that in the Premier League. But while we got you on, Sam, you're talking about this great run. Obviously, promotion last season. You're now definitely in that playoff shout in the Isthmian Premier. If you carry on with this run, who knows where you'll go? But also, you know, things are moving on off the field as well. Is this going to be the final season of the Wander of the Wanderers? Are you going to be in Flamingo Park next season?
Unfortunately not. We've got one more. We're really close to getting the building work started, and it's about an 18-month build, so we're still planning for 21-22 season, so another season over with Bromley. We've been brilliant. You know, we've had a great relationship over there with the guys.
Yeah.
But it's just brilliant to be involved, you know, to be back involved with the club. I've been on and off involved with the club since 89 when I signed to play. And I come back, I'm full time, you know, step three club with a full time CEO. It's quite strange, really. I left the job of 30 years to come across and work with Gary and the directors. And we're on the mate. It's a great journey at the moment for what Cray Wanderers, and I think we've got lots more to come. You know, I've had a mad history. I've got a few crazy stories about ended up playing in goal in a tournament against Sheffield on the 150th anniversary. So it's brilliant. The club at the moment is a real good vibe about it. And Tony's an exceptional manager. You know, the stuff he does, the prep work he does, he's around watching teams constantly. He works so hard on phases of play and preparation for opposition. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time at Cray Wanderers.
Yeah, it's always had that spirit, though. You know, even go back to the times when I played against it, Sam. It was just always, it always had that feel about it. You know, good guys as well. Always had a good laugh with Joey Francis and Janko and that. It was
good guys.
You know, so yeah.
And the directors are all, you know, two of the directors have played for the club back in the day. You know, Gary's just unbelievable. 25 years, 14 years in planning. You know, he's just absolutely great, wondrous form for us.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is a Georgie Taylor story. Well, I'm going to tell it all day today now when I see people. But try and get him on the pitch.
Yeah, well, I think we'll have to find a way.
Surely people would do it. You know?
I've got to advise to make sure that he brings his passport with him as well, because, you know, those registration forms, prove his ID. Yeah. What we don't want is you getting in the playoffs and then... registering an ineligible player.
No, it's brilliant.
Oh, we'd never live it down.
Brilliant story.
But Sam, thank you for sharing it with us, and we hope you have a great day on Sunday. Merson, your visitors, and continue well for the rest of the season. Yeah. But hope it all goes well, and
cheers, guys, keep
us in the loop.
Yeah, good luck, Sam.
Yeah, cheers, guys. You know, we will definitely keep you in the loop as well regards to the ground and the developments there. Yeah. So we are planning. We're trying to plan a game against Sheffield FC in the summer, actually on the grass pitch we've got down at Flamingo Park. That are 18 years, so that might be quite a historic game again.
Particularly if George Taylor dons his glove.
Yeah, George and Gold.
Yeah, that could be the one. That could be his second debut,
yeah. Brilliant.
All right,
cheers, guys.
Cheers, man.
Cheers, Sam. They're the sort of... As I said, they're the sort of stories you're only getting non-league, aren't they?
It's brilliant. I mean, when we came in and read it today, I giggled from moment one. I think it's a good idea, and people might say, oh, it's a bit cringy. No, it's not. It's a brilliant story, especially, you know, because he's been there before, and why wouldn't you, you know? And it's a bit like, you know, they are a bit like that, Craig. They've got a real sort of... I'm nearly... In my head, they're like a Wimbledon. You know, people talk about the Wimbledon spirit and the crazy gang and all that nonsense from 100 years ago. But Cray have that feel about them as well. They're proper survivors. They've survived a long time without their own ground. They've had, you know, their ups and downs. And I'm delighted to see them on the up again because, as I say, you can only judge people how you find them. And any time I went there, win, draw, or lose, I've had some great laughs. I'll tell you this one quickly. We, when I was at Harrowborough, we played them at Harrow, and we were having a terrible time, and they beat us at home, and I'm in the first team dressing room, and I've still got the door open, and it was Janko and Joey Francis, and that was his team. Joe Vines might have played and people like that, but they used to do Champagne Supernova, you know, the Oasis song, and honestly, the building was shaking. My dressing room is like a morgue. And I just kept the door open and let my players listen to it. I says, you know, we've still got to go there. And anyway, we go there like a month later, 6 weeks later, and we beat them. And I always remember Jamie and the lads, the Cray lads will vouch for this. At Bromley, the dressing room doors face each other. You know, it's literally you walk out one, you straight across into the other one. And now we come in, and we didn't have the tape of it, Champagne Supernova. And I just signed Jamie Jackson on loan from Slough, I think, the goalkeeper, Jacko. And anyway, like every song in the world, we all knew the first line. But fortunately for us, Jacko knew the whole song. So I had the door open, and I was like standing in the doorway singing it. It's all stupid children stuff, but this is what we're like, people, you know. And to be fair, when we came in the bar after it, like, fair play, Janko and Joey Francis came over and they were just cramming laughter going, says, we knew we were going to get, as soon as we lost the game, we're disappointed, but it was Anderson, we're going to get it big time and we deserve it. And because I had to take it on the chin at Harrow. And that's, listen, we all want to win and we all celebrate wins. And it's just stories that come back to mind. But that sort of people, and we always had a beer, we never fell out, you know, which is, I think the way forward, but it's just Champagne Supernova. So I can assure you, ex-Cray players will remember it. They might still do it, actually.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers and welcome back to the Non-League Show. He's editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, we had to, really, didn't we? You know,
you had to. You had no choice, did you?
David's
a
very good stand-in, but people get fed up with my voice, so we have to vary it up every now and then, you know. I've had Dave Anderson on the gaffer tapes this week with Dave Anderson and Dean Brennan was an interesting one. We were looking for interpreters, but we managed to survive with the accents on that one. So, you know, we can have a chat about what's been going on in the non-league world this week. I wish I was the fairground operator for the managerial merry-go-round because it's always on the go, isn't it? Yeah, probably £3 a pop or something like that in your nearest recreation ground. I guess the first one was Martin Cool departing Staines Town last Friday. Then on the Saturday, Staines Town getting a 7-1 drubbing at Bracknell Town. It's not the good old days for Staines Town down there at the moment, is it?
No, it's obviously pretty poor and difficult few years for the fans at Staines and the club, and you know, it's a sort of club that not long ago were in National League South and Conference South as it was then. I remember going to watch their FA Cup game. Some good FA Cup runs. I saw one of them when they played Millwall on TV. I'm pretty sure it was on TV, but they had these sort of big games and lots was happening down at the club. And the Boone family did so much for the club, and obviously then they've spoke to Matthew Boone a couple of years ago now, and they're sort of looking to move the club on, and kind of since it's moved on to different owners, it's just really been a difficult time, a difficult period, and going through managers like anything at the moment as well, and it's sort of difficult to kind of judge them really on the situation, because it's been so difficult, and they're really struggling down there and looking for a manager again.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one to attract people to, I guess, when everybody else sees how many managers they've got through, they've got difficulties, I guess, there with revenue streams because of where the place is located. It's a tough one, but again, you feel for the fans and you hope that things will turn around for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the fans that you always feel for in these situations, because they're the ones who are going through it every week, and as you say, they're sort of turning up on a Saturday and seeing their team get hammered, and it's no fun when it's like that. And this is when your fanship is really, really sort of put to the test, because there's a lot of sort of pretty frustrated people down there. But it's always one of those clubs that's always so good, and you want to see them on the rise again. But obviously this season is going to be about survival and staying up if they can. And sometimes you wonder if a club goes down a little bit further and whether they can sort of maybe regroup a little bit. But I think as you said there, the sort of revenue streams has been an issue for a few years now, even when they were sort of going all right.
Yeah, I think if there are any Staines Town fans, I'm sure they'll like to remind me of the drubbing they gave Hayes and Yedding a few years back when we sunk down and regrouped and hopefully are on the way back up at my club. But I'm sure Martin Cool will be back in a job somewhere in management, whether that's in non-league or in the pro game again very soon. Like Ian Long, who departed Stourbridge when they were 1 point off the playoffs over the weekend in Southern Central. But he's, which seems a strange departure, but it appears he's back in his old club at Alverchurch, who were two off the bottom, I think. And how life as a manager can change in a space of a few days, he's got a different task ahead of him there.
Yeah, I think it was even quicker than that. I think it was a few hours. He left Stourbridge on Monday, which I think was a surprise to everyone. And like you say, a point outside of the playoffs. I've been in the FA Cup first round this season, and he's only sort of a few months really into the job. And it was kind of a funny one, because it was, I've sort of seen them sort of climbing back up the table in recent weeks. I know they've had sort of a couple of maybe a little bit inconsistent, but thinking, oh, we need to do a piece of Stourbridge, so we need to speak to Ian, because they're going all right. And then suddenly you see that they've gone. But I've spoken to him this week, and that he was offered a job the same day that the news came out that he'd left Stourbridge, and I think he's sort of disappointed that he didn't, get to see the season through, because his success at Alverchurch was quite remarkable. And they brought them up consecutive promotions and got them in the playoffs last year as well. And a club like that were in Step 5 not long ago were pushing for Step 2 football, and on a small budget, and he had players there that were likely going to move on in the summer, and that's kind of why, and the draw of Stourbridge combined with that was kind of why he felt that he wanted to take the Stourbridge job, because it's one of those real sort of traditional non-league clubs that has a lot of so well high standing, and so he had Gary Hackett in charge for many years and great cup runs, and he was sort of hoping that he could be the one to sort of get that promotion for them. But yeah, tough one. The life of a manager is very strange, and I think as he said himself, he said, I suppose I should never really be surprised about what happens in football. But he's back at Old Church, where he knows the club well. The club know him, and there's a task on their hands to make sure that, to try and get out of the relegation zone. They are in a real situation, and there's no time to waste. But it was sort of hopefully go in there and have the kind of effect that he's had before at the club, and kind of sort of show that this establishing was a bit of a blip maybe, and I'm sure he'll come good again.
Mm. And talking of it's a strange life being a manager. No stranger story this week than Gary Hill not becoming Chelmsford City's manager.
Yeah, it's sort of a very strange one where it seems that Gary was pretty convinced he was going to be a manager because he'd been offered the job and by some of the directors at Chelmsford, and he was sort of trying to get players in and talking to other managers and everything like that. And then it's obviously come out in through the notes in the programme that it all sort of fell through, and Gary's kind of had his say in last week's NLP. I think there was sort of a bit of an issue where in the sort of club statement they sort of said that Gary in the chairman Steve Shaw's programme notes, he said that Gary spoke to him about the terms and wanted a 2-year contract, and he didn't really see why there should be a 2-year contract, because I think sort of by his own admission, he's not sort of in a football man, but in that world, offering a contract is often par for the course. And there was kind of a bit of a scripture about Gary asking for a cash sum, which is actually the wages, not like an upfront sum. So Gary obviously wasn't particularly happy with how that went down, and it's kind of back to the beginning for Chelmsford and in their recruitment. I mean, it's been a few weeks since Rod Stringer left. Now they've also had a good result the other night, didn't they? Under the interim manager, beat Wealdstone, but it's kind of the season's kind of probably gone now from a playoff point of view. Once we showed what good job Rod Stringer had been doing, and it needs to be obviously resolved. And I guess they'll be sort of rethinking where they're going now, because it was even by their own admission, Chelmsford, it's not been the smoothest of job interviews and job application process.
Yeah, it's like life never seems to be that smooth at Chelmsford City. Yeah, but again, in a similar area, proving football is a funny old game. Midweek, we also saw Isbian North runaway leaders Maldon and Tiptree lose at home to bottom of the table Romford.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Maldon and Tiptree last week against Bury Town. They went 1-0 down, went down to 10 men, and came back and won 2-1. And they looked a good side. It was a good game. Barry played some good football. They played some good football, and you could sort of see. I saw them earlier in the season against Newport County in the FA Cup as well, and some good players there. And sort of bringing Jerome Slew off the bench, and he scored the winner against Barry. And they had a win on Saturday as well. And you sort of think, their game's behind and catching up because of their FA Cup exploits. But they look like they're going to. They're looking sort of good for the title, and then a result comes in like that. Obviously, it's a little bit different with Romford, with possibly the players that they've got there now aren't. With obviously Glenn Tampton's involvement and kind of the turnaround that's been there and been happening. And they've sort of struggled to get games on, but they're on a decent run. I think they've won 4 in a row, and they're sort of trying to climb away from the bottom. So it's kind of a bit of possibly a slightly false position from Romford, but still great result for them on the pitch. And I'm sure Maldon will be licking their wings, and they're good to go again at the weekend.
Yeah, and just ensuring that the rest of the world knows that non-league exists. It was good to see Oxford City's Finn Tapp winning Love Island as well, and it went down well in my house.
Well, Tim, I'm going to level with you here. I am only 34, but I feel like Love Island and that is not my. I'm past that now. You have to speak to other people in the NLP offices who seem to have great knowledge of the whole Love Island process and Love Island. They tell me that Luke Trotman, the Darlington defender, was a good shot to win, and they also said that Finn was as well. But Finn took it, and the non-league boys apparently doing non-league crowd in Love Island. Apparently they came across quite well, but I don't know whether Oxford are what Oxford City are expecting from their newly crowned reality TV show champion. Because again, I'm told by the boys in the office that he said that he was going to move to Manchester or something, but which. Not sure. The club who he's contracted to are going to make of that.
So, is there suggestions there then that applications have been filled in the non-league paper Towers office for the next series of Love Island?
There's not a chance they'd get on there, but if he's on through the night, I guess they might fall asleep if you listen to those boys talk. But it's there's too much Love Island chat in the NLP's offices.
I have to admit, I'm with you on that, Matt. I've not watched an episode ever. I'm told by my family and the fact that my Twitter stream seems to fill up every now and then when these events are on. But anyway,
pleased the non-league boys came across well, because I sort of spent time away with England City of Luke Trotman, and he's a nice lad. He's a good lad, and obviously he's been recovering from injury, and apparently he's doing his rehab while he's in there, and you know, it's good for them, and it's obviously making them, I guess they get sort of, you know, got a chance to get some money and things like that, which is, you know, who wouldn't if you're a young lad, an opportunity. But it's all a bit lost on me, I'm afraid.
But what's not lost on you is it's a big weekend in the FA Vars and FA Trophy. Plenty of coverage for you guys, hopefully to cover if the weather holds up. Can we expect lots of feature games this weekend then?
Yep, huge weekend. We've got pictures from all the quarterfinals in both competitions, from the FA Trophy and the FA FA Vars. We're dispatching David Richardson round to Concord for their game against Royston. It's going to be a great story, whoever wins there, really. Concord getting to the semis or Royston, who've been upsetting the odds all the way to this stage. And we've got Avely going up to Notts County as the early lunchtime kickoff. Again, a remarkable run that they're having, and a great opportunity to go up to a huge ground, a huge club, and go and do their best that they can and try and cause an upset. And then you've got Halezone at Barnet as well. Halezone, another step four side. Whether we'll have a step four club in the semi-finals remains to be seen. But we've seen in the last few years that clubs outside of non-league's top tier can get to Wembley or have good runs, and it's proven the case again, obviously with Fylde and Harrogate the other semi. And then in the Vars, we've got as I said, pictures from all the games and lots of brilliant storylines in the Vars that it throws up every year. You've got Wroxham with their 27-year-old manager Jordan Southgate, with Grant Holt in his 30s on the back nine of his career. Up front for Wroxham, they're playing Bitton, and you've got Hebbentown, I believe, have sold over 1,000 tickets for their game against Plymouth Parkway. So it's going to be a fantastic weekend, and the front page is up for grabs for a trophy or a Vars winner on Saturday.
They'll all be looking out for it on social media Saturday evening to see if they've made it. Don't forget, you can buy the non-league paper on Sunday morning. Subscribe digitally as well, I'm sure, via the non-league paper website. Matt, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Speak soon.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, as ever, Dave Anderson.
Thank you. I must add, you know, that just because we're on Northwood Watch at the moment, aren't we? You know, that's what we tend to be. They had a win Tuesday night, which is their first after, say, 11 or 12 defeats. I don't know if I can't remember which one, but we had Robert in here, and obviously being amongst us, Tim, has taken him to his first victory.
Well, it's good to know that the mockers haven't hit him from appearing on the show.
I'm just checking my account for the bonus, the win bonus, you know, so it's not in there yet. But yeah, no, delighted for him, friend of the show, and as I said before, delighted for Ian Barry, who took a chance on a young manager. Well, it's only one win, but, you know, when you've gone 11, 12 straight defeats, you wonder if you're ever going to win again.
Yeah. Well, thank you to Robbie. It was very good last week. Thank you to all of our guests this week as well, and a big thank you to everybody listening.
And the other thing is I'm going training because I'm going to make a comeback. I'm only 57. I'm a goalkeeper. I have another 40 years playing if I want, you know.
So if there are any goalkeepers, gloves, manufacturers looking for a new sponsorship deal, Dave Anson's in the offing.
Great story.
Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season, join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anson at Dave Anson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, myself at Tim Fuel. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, all good podcast aggregation sites. You can also take a look there for the non-league gaffer tapes too. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA. JABBA.